Blog Talk Radio.
Major tour or anything like that.
But I know that.
I came up with one last year myself, and it was slow. If not, I wish it had been steady, but it wasn't slow. But I've got a new one coming out this year as well. As I had a publisher pick it up, and he's pretty excited. So hopefully that'll work. But I'm hoping that I loved your book, by the way. I just wanted to tell you, and we did a double show on it last year before it came out. But have you had any new finds, new and exciting come up here that might
Jeffrey,
talk about?
If I can, Leo, Jeffrey and I talked this afternoon for a little bit. And, you know, it's amazing on the materials. That, I mean, he had me amazed, I think, in talking about the things that are in the book and how what is happening now in the world. And I think Jeffrey can put light on, I think, our understanding of the Bible. But, you know, some of these prophecies and how these prophecies could be coming happening right now, including what's going on over there in the Middle East with the earthquakes that we're receiving. And maybe Jeffrey... maybe why don't we leave this up to you and maybe take us where you want to go with this book and with, you know, with this information and how it relates to the relevance of living in a society right now.
Okay.
Yeah, and also Jeff, if you could, I read something recently too about a comet that may be on our way. I believe its name is Elena, I believe, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Next year. Next year, huh? And I'm not sure. Maybe you can highlight or enlighten some of us as to what the what that's all about. If it plays right into your prophecy or into your book.
Not particularly. There are always comets coming by, and we're constantly making new discoveries of what's out there. And you know, we've seen some close pass-bys by asteroids, and NASA's been busy circling. An asteroid with one of their spaceships. And so a lot is going on, and new information is coming in all the time. Since I did the book, one that I really appreciated and kind of vindicated one of the things I talked about is that NASA took pictures of Comet Hartley 2 back in November of 2010. And they got a close-up, and they were very surprised about what they saw when they did a close-up. They saw that there was a literal snowstorm around the comet, that it was a 20-mile-wide ice cloud around the comet, and in this ice cloud were chunks of ice, some approximately the size of basketballs. And these chunks of ice, so when a comet comes by, it doesn't just alone hit you, but it's got all these little companions with it. And so they refer to it as hailstones, giant hailstones. Well, those who are familiar with the Bible know that giant hailstones are one of the things prophesied for the end times. And in this book of Revelation, in Revelation chapter 16, it talks about giant hail, and it talks about how the hailstones would weigh approximately 100 pounds each. Well, no one has ever heard of 100-pound hailstones. But now NASA takes a picture and posts it on their site and does a press release and saying, yep, they're there. We never suspected it. We never thought of it. And my point is that in the book, I write about these giant hailstones and make note. People recall there was that great battle with Joshua when he had a victory over the Amorites in Joshua chapter 10, and there was great hailstones that fell down, and that was supposed to have killed more of the enemy than with the sword. So giant hailstones are a reality. No one ever knew of them before. I didn't even have it exactly right. I thought it was just a comet breaking up, but there are giant hailstones that travel with the body of a comet, as taken recently discovered with Comet Hartley 2. So this is the type of thing, as we learn more, we're seeing more things from the Bible in terms of comets and impacts and the potential impact. But what I wanted to talk about tonight is kind of one of very popular thing that everybody knows a little about, and that's Armageddon. I'm sure Leo and George, you've heard all sorts of stories and been all sorts of movies and all sorts of books about Armageddon and how this is going to be the war to end all wars, and this is going to be the final end times battle.
And 1,000 years of peace.
Yes. You got to. And so what is prophesied?
Yeah, how does that relate to us entering Aquarius?
I have no idea.
Oh, I see. Right, because,
I have no idea.
That's probably that's supposed to bring us into the reign of peace, if you will, that'll rule the planet. So I was just curious because all these things seem to be coming together, and things in the Revelation as well as the Mayan calendar as well as so many things have predicted these times that we're living in, and I was just wondering if you've made all those connections or not.
Well, a lot of people have predicted these things, but a lot of that, to be frank with you, are people who have been playing off the Bible over the ages. Once that information is out, it gets adapted, and different groups change it around and build on it. Probably the most famous there is the work of Nostradamus, who was very familiar with Revelation. And his prophecies tie into Revelation to a great deal, mainly because he was a student of Revelation. But what I was saying here about Comet Hartley, here's a very specific detail. You know, everybody can have an opinion and a theory of what's going to happen. You know, it's like going to the racetrack. I mean, if there's 10 horses running, there's 10 different ideas of who they think is going to win. But there's only one winner. And so here we're seeing details with winners coming literally out of the pages of the Bible in that, son of a gun, there are giant hailstones that are associated with comets. Now, the hailstones in itself, you say, oh, wow, okay, hailstones. But it's tied because during this great battle of Armageddon in Revelation 16, it talks about these hailstones falling. And then there's another battle in the Old Testament that's supposed to take place in the end times. It's the battle of chapters Ezekiel 38 and 39. And this is supposed to be a great war. And there's a lot of confusion on this. And it even reached the presidential level. I don't know if you remember Reagan talking about Russia, that evil empire from Ezekiel, because that empire or group in Ezekiel 38 is supposed to invade Israel. So with all going on in the Middle East, here is specific Bible prophecy calling for an invasion of Israel. And what people have not realized over time is that that battle from Ezekiel 38-39 is the same battle from Revelation 16. Again, here are the little details. The countries mentioned in Ezekiel 38-39 have been associated with Russia. You've probably heard the words Gog and Magog and Meshech and Tubal, and there are people who think or thought going back to the 1700s, 1800s, that Tubal is Tobolsk and Meshech is Moscow and Magog is somehow related to the Russians and through the Scythians. And that was a tribe that are out in the plateau in that area around Iran. And they are the progenitors of the Russians. And that's all silliness. Because we have, you know, we just finished this trial business with Anthony. We have primary evidence. A thing a lot of people don't read are the court records of the Assyrian royal court. And there we have in cuneiform writing, in Akkadian that it's written out in, it talks about the countries from Ezekiel 38-39. It talks about Magog, Meshech, Tubal, Togomar. And it tells us all about them and the court's dealings with them. And they have absolutely nothing to do with Russia. Russia didn't even come to be as a country or an official place until about 800 A.D., and they're now realizing that the founders of Russia were not Scythians or some group from Ezekiel 38-39, but Vikings. The Vikings came over, and they came with their boats, and they traded. They came down the Volga River, and there was even a movie done about that. Michael Crichton, I'm sure you know of him and some of the great movies and stories and books he's written. It's called The Twelfth Warrior, and I remember Antonio, I think it's Banderas, plays the part of an Arab who meets the Vikings, and he writes all, he was a historian, and he was up there, and he met them on the Upper Volga and spent time with them, and that became the heart of this book, The Twelfth Warrior, where he joins with them as they go into an adventure. And so the Russians are one thing. They have nothing to do with Ezekiel 38-39, and the evidence there is the Assyrian court records that make it clear they refer to, and there really was a guy who was God. His name in Greek is Gyges. And in the Assyrian court records, he's called Gyges of Magog, okay, just like in the Bible. The Assyrian word is Magugu. And Ma is a part of a word that means land of. So he's Gog from the land, from Magog, from the Gog from the land of Gog. So that got confused because it's an eponym, but the actual country is Lydia, and that's in western Turkey, in western Asia Minor, and he's referred to both ways, Gyges from Lydia and Gyges from Magog. So we know exactly who he is. And now the mystery, and I know how people love mysteries, is why would there be an end times prophecy talking about countries from the 7th century B.C. in Asia Minor? Now, well, they represent a Confederate force, and they're being used as a type, a picture of the countries or the empire that will invade during the end times, kind of like a unified group. And indeed, Gog of Magog or Gog of Lydia led a unified force against the invading Scythians and other groups who came down there, and even God presented some Scythian prisoners to the Assyrian court because the Assyrians were either fighting them or using the Scythians. So it's a whole big mess, and it's like people have read the National Enquirer of the day and they read historians and they all have their impressions, but they don't realize, just like we have ancient records on the Bible, they're ancient Assyrian records, cuneiform records, that people know tell similar stories to the Bible. And in this case, these are court dealings, so we know who those countries are. Now, the point of brilliance is, well, it's being used as a type of a multinational force, but is there anything literal to it? Why would you pick that? Well, in the end times, David is supposed to return and unify all of Israel. Well, it's not going to be the actual David. Again, here is a type. So Gog is a type, and he's typing what the word everybody knows, the Antichrist. And in the book of Daniel, at the end times, the last empire is supposed to be a revived Roman Empire. And Daniel talks about that in several places in the book of Daniel. So is the Bible confused? Is it going to be a revived Roman Empire? Is it going to be Russians? What is going on here? But here's the little trick, which stunned me when I was doing research on this thing. Once there was a famine in the land of Lydia, which we also call Magog, and the king's son left with half the population, and they took a boat ride, and they went to Italy, and they became what we now call the Etruscans. We know that because of Herodotus, who is like the world's first historian, wrote all about that. And people says, well, that's silly. Well, recently, you're back there by New York City, and New York Times wrote an article saying that there's now DNA evidence from the early burials found from the Etruscans that their DNA matches the DNA from people from Lydia, and that the unique Etruscan cattle, they're different from the European cattle, their DNA matches the DNA of cattle from Lydia or Magog. And so there was a connection, and here's the most powerful aspect. The connection is Rome started and they had seven kings. Four of them were Etruscans. And Rome were kind of a bunch of hillbillies until the Etruscans came in, and they were involved with the building of Rome. And, you know, people have heard the story of Romulus and Remus and laying out, well, they consulted Etruscan priests. But in Etruscans, you have displaced people from Magog or Lydia. And so the actual roots of the Roman Empire, which is supposed to be the bad guys at the end, come from Magog / Lydia. And so that prophecy in Ezekiel 38:39 is kind of brilliant. In other words, Ezekiel is giving us the answer, but he's not making it too obvious. You got to do a little homework to see why he would do that, and then you suddenly see that it's the same war. Why do I say it's the same war other than that? Well, in Revelation, there are the giant hailstones, in Revelation and Armageddon, and giant hails is described in Ezekiel 38:39. In Ezekiel 38:39, the Bible says God's going to throw fire upon Magog, and in Revelation 16, we're getting stuff that's depicting a comet impact. And in Ezekiel 38:39 and in Revelation 16, they both talk about great earthquakes. Well, if you have a comet impacting anywhere in the neighborhood, you're going to get a very, very big earthquake. And so I can go through in all sorts of detail. I have posted this on my website about who Magog really is and about this battle and why the two battles are really one and the same. And people could go there and get a free download and read all the details for themselves and make up their own minds if they're a matchup. And when we boil the elements and we know what these words mean and what they're talking about, and you go item by item, you'll see it's really the same battle. The website, if I can't mention it, is www.thecometsofgod.com, thecometsofgod.com, and you go to the downloads, and you'll see them mark the free downloads with maps and the whole bit, and they could read this, because this really changes a lot of things about, you know, there have been books, Tim LaHaye and all these guys writing books, and they've got this Russian invasion. And if I could tell you anything that I know from history and archaeology and from the Bible, there's not going to be a Russian invasion. They're not the bad guys. The bad guys is this unified empire led by the Antichrist, and they're not from Russia. I know that was a lot.
In your book, the Appendix B, you outline basically the materials you're talking about right now.
Yes.
As Russia not being the Magog.
Yeah, I give the references, something, you know, makes her a little slow reading sometimes, but I give the actual references so people can go and look this stuff up themselves. They can go to the reference. A lot of these references are also online, and they can see the actual words and how they're talking about. Because one of the things, you know, as I've gotten older and I've learned the hard way, is that everybody's entitled to their own opinion. And, you know, you're going to have lots of opinion. But everybody's not entitled to their own set of facts. And if we're going to deal honestly, we got to face the facts. And so the facts of who those countries are in Ezekiel 38:39 is that they have nothing to do with Russia, but they ultimately have to do with the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire is said in the book of Daniel to be the one who's going to cause all the trouble at the end. Now, who is the revived Roman Empire? That would be upsetting. But people don't realize that the revived Roman Empire is Europe. The bad guys, and this may be a shock to people, but the Europeans are going to be the big invaders coming down from the north. And you say, well, how could they possibly do that? One of the Bible principles is that which is to be hath already been. You know, at weddings, there's nothing new under the sun. Well, a unified Europe came down from 900, 1000 AD, 1100 AD, and invaded Israel, depending on how you count them, 8, 9, 10 times. It's called the Crusades.
Right. Right.
And so they've done it before, and people don't realize that during the 1900s and 1800s, the Pope was always calling the leader of the European group, it was then called the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation, that you had these individual nations, France and Spain and Portugal, but they were part of a larger grouping called an empire, and it was called the Holy Roman Empire, which officially began when Charlemagne in 800 A.D., was crowned by Pope Leo III and saying he is the protector of the Catholic Church and he is now the protector of the realm. And so the Pope says, you know, we have the power and we give it to whom we choose, and they gave it to Charlemagne, and he became the first emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. And then that was finally defeated when Napoleon came on the scene and he wanted to be the emperor. And rather than give him a chance to inherit that crown, the Habsburgs, you may remember, abdicated so he couldn't get it. And so it's been lying dormant. But now we have a thing called the European Community, and very much the same countries are involved. The building they meet in is the Charlemagne building. And if you're watching the news, you'll see the European Community has a lot to say now about what's been going on in the Middle East. Instead of just making comment and following America's lead, they have very, very definite ideas about how things should go in the Middle East. And so, according to the
what
Bible...
What role does the Jesuits play in this for the church?
I can't tell you that specifically. They're part of the church, and I wouldn't dare venture into what the exact details of what's going on in the church.
Okay.
That gave me in big trouble.
Well, I understand that, but, you know, you talk about the powers that be, and, you know, I know they are just part of the church, along with some of the other messianic groups at old allegiance, you know, to the Pope.
Yeah, well, the Catholic Church is different. They're very special.
Okay.
What happened when Charlemagne got the crown from Pope Leo, we had a marriage.
Yes.
In other words, the ecclesiastical power, the religious power, joined with the military power, Charlemagne, who beat all those other countries up, and that's why they wanted him as the protector. And so you had religious power in conjunction with political power.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a reproduction, if you remember, in Rome or prior empires, going all the way back to the time of Babylon. There was a marriage between the religious forces, the priests, and the military. And the two moved forward in time through the Greek Empire, through the Persian Empire. And so after the Roman Empire faded, the old Roman Empire, when it was reconstituted by Charlemagne, again, we had this marriage between religious authority and political authority. And so what's going to happen at the end times, it seems the Bible in the case that this marriage is going to go on as it did before, and that's what's going to constitute the empire, because the thing that bound these different European countries together was the Roman Catholic Church.
Well, you know, the question that I have right now, I think, is the British Empire. When you mentioned, you know, the Europeans, would you include them with the Europeans, or would they have allegiance, let's say, to the West, like they always had, you know, when it came
for
to
a short while,
medicine?
Yeah, they were part of the Roman Empire, and my answer to that is, I don't know.
Okay.
There, you know, the Bible says there's going to be 10 that join together, and they give their power to the Antichrist.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Okay.
I don't even know how many countries are involved in the European Community. But after the shakeout, it's supposed to be 10, and there's going to be a crisis, and they give their authority over to this central leader, not unlike the person who is the head of the European Community. You know, they have a president, and, you know, it's like the United States of Europe, and the binding thing is the president of the European Community. And that is kind of a model that's supposed to be taking place when the Antichrist is on the scene. And if anything, no one should feel bad because he's going to change the religious structure around greatly to suit himself. And
Jeffrey, with what's happening over in the Middle East right now,
yeah.
can you relate that to any of your research studies, you know, connecting, you know, the powers and how they how they've switched there in the Middle East in the last 5-10 years?
Yeah, I know a little about that, and
you know,
it's
I
written up
get
in
on,
the free material.
Into political
yeah,
understandings. I mean, this is
yeah.
this is not a political question, other than just dealing with human nature and where our culture is going so quick.
Well, the culture is not doing too well so quick. and what happens is, what is it, Rahm Emanuel, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, and we could see, even as we're speaking, they're cooking up the power that be a new crisis. And how this country comes out on the end, I don't know. I know the countries of Europe, the Bible indicates, they'll be there on the battlefield at Armageddon. Now, here's the surprise. Everybody says Armageddon is going to take place in Israel by the town of Megiddo. See, Megiddo sounds like Megiddon. And Ar or Har is the Hebrew word for mountain or hill. And so they say, yes, Armageddon is Mountain Megiddo. And that's a town, Megiddo, that goes way back to the time of David. The only problem is there are no mountains there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Hebrew, words typically describe something, not just simple naming or, you know, proper name. And Har or Ar is mountain, and Megiddo, the Hebrew word, would be Megiddon, and that means rendezvous or assembly. So now we take a different look at Armageddon or Harmageddon. Harmageddon would be rendered a mountain assembly of troops. And so a mountain assembly of troops is the theme of Ezekiel 38:39. So Armageddon is talked about in Revelation 16, and it's described in Ezekiel 38:39 because it says, I'll defeat you in the mountains. I'll call you down to the mountains. In the mountains, you'll meet your end. So they're both talking about the Ezekiel passages and the Revelation Armageddon passages about a battle in the mountains. Now, here's something that's quite a surprise. In Revelation, and discussing Armageddon, it says the blood, at the end of the battle, the blood will be as high as the horse's bridles and will flow 1,600 furlongs. Well, when you do the math, the distance from northern Israel down through the Dead Sea, if you're following the Jordan River, and then if you were to back up into the river Zarid, is exactly 1,600 furlongs. Because in the Bible it says, who's that coming from Basra? That's to the south. And that river Zarid to the south flows from south to north. And so that whole riverine system is exactly 1,600 furlongs. And the place where the battle takes place is by Mount Hermon, and the highest peak of which, people don't realize, is called Mount Zion. Not the little hill in Jerusalem, that hill of Zion, the mighty mountain, Mount Zion, it's discussed in Scripture, and that is the highest peak of Mount Hermon, which is one of the world's biggest mountains, and there people would take refuge. In other words, if you're being invaded or troubled, you go hide in the mountains like the Afghanistan people did, and there you have a beautiful play out of what's written in the Bible, because there are the mountains, the distance of the River Jordan flows 1,600 furlongs, and it's deeper water, so the water, the blood could be as high as the horse's bridles. The mountain at Mount Hermon has a karst or limestone deposit, and so it's got like Swiss cheese. And so if you pour a glass of water or a glass of blood, it'll percolate down through the mountain and the porous material in the mountain. And there's a spring there at Banias, which is the headwaters of the Jordan River, which is the lifeblood of Israel and the people of that time. And so you would have that flowing. And right below the mountain, the expression, they've heard, they said the wine press is full, and they're calling for the beginning of the mountain, and even in the Battle Hymn of the Republics, the grapes of wrath are being crushed. Well, there is a wine press right below Mount Hermon. It's called the Hula Basin. In times of old in geology, there was a volcanic eruption that kind of blocked the south flow of the Jordan, and the Jordan had to cut through it, but still it's a low spot, and there's a little lake there that looks like a little kidney stone, a little shape of a kidney, and that's called Hula Lake, and it's been a low spot, and it goes way back in time, and so literally you could have a battle on the mountains, blood poured on the mountains, could percolate down through, come out that spring at the base of the mountains, and pool up in the Hula Basin until it breaks through and goes and flows the whole length of the Jordan River. So, again, everybody's got to decide these things for themselves, but I'm just amazed to see that there are details, and then we go take the details to task, and we're hearing about what the Bible says the end times are going to be like, and it describes the battle. It's almost like you have a road map in front of you and saying, okay, give me a spot that's got mountains, it's got a basin. Well, there's no basin at Mount Megiddo, at Megiddo, the town of Megiddo. There's not even a valley there. The valley, the closest valley is 18 miles away. And there's a misnaming on the early Roman maps. But all those details there are talking about a battle of the mountains, Armageddon, mountain rendezvous with troops, even to the point that sometimes in the Hebrew language there are multiple meanings, and the multiple meanings even seem to work because one of the alternative translations of Megiddam is to press together as if to cut oneself. And in Ezekiel 38:39, when it's describing the battle, it says the people were very confused and they turned their swords on each other. And then after, people who follow the Bible in Matthew 24, and they're talking about carcasses being out there and the birds are invited to a great feast. And in the Old Testament, there are passages about that. And in Revelation 16, it talks about the kings and leaders of the earth all dying there and the birds of prey. And interestingly, Israel is on a flyway for eagles and all sorts of birds of prey. When they come from Europe down to Africa, they fly right over that area. And so in Scripture, it talks about how they're invited to this great feast being prepared for them. And so I myself marvel that this thing matches so well with the geography, what will be. And my prayer, you don't want to be there, that America not find itself on that battlefield with those nations gathered against Israel. That's not a good place to be.
What nations are you talking about again?
Pardon?
What nations were you talking about again?
A collection of 10 European nations. Can't tell you which ones exactly. But they had something to do with the original Roman Empire.
Jeffrey, we state that the comets possibly, you know, have struck us many times in the past, and understanding the writings. I think questions that I would have is how were these people able to survive this and go back to a normal way of living when catastrophe like this happens. Do you find any reference in Revelations or connected with Revelation?
Yeah, in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, which is called the Olivet Prophecy, it says no flesh is going to be able to survive the onslaught because evidently, and this is what I think, that the common impact gets bigger and bigger because in Revelation 16, it talks about how every city will be shaken down. So we're talking about a really big impact. Faults can only produce earthquakes of a certain size, upwards of 10 maybe magnitude on the Richter scale.
Well, that's still a function.
Well, that's not enough to take all the cities of the world.
No.
But if a 6-mile in diameter comet slams into the planet, you're going to have the equivalent of a 13 or 14 on the Richter scale.
Yeah.
And believe me, all the cities of the earth will be shaken. The earth will be rocked in space. Even in Isaiah 24, it talks about the earth being rocked in space and shaken. And so it seems that the battle ends with a very big impact. And the thing that used to get me when I first started saying this is that every mountain disappeared, and the valleys ran away, and the mountains ran away. And I was saying to myself, how are you going to do that? I mean, that's impossible. Well, a few years ago, geologists learned that the moon has an impact on the far side that we don't see. And an impactor, comet or asteroid, was so big, and we now see, satellite photos of it on the far side, penetrated the moon. They did seismic on the moon from satellites and gravity maps. And the face, the man on the moon, those are lava flows. And that was the result of the impact on the far side. So on the opposite side of from the impact, molten material came out. And so if you had an impact that was big enough, for example, in Australia a few years ago, in Antarctica, they found the Wilkes Land crater that's 300-some-odd miles across. It's enormous. And opposite it is the Siberian Traps in Russia, where lava flow is the size of the United States, miles thick, flowed out from the impact. So now, if you have an impact that's big enough to penetrate the Earth crust, and we now know that's possible because we've seen that that is the case on Venus, why Venus looks relatively young in terms of cratering, because it got resurfaced. It got smacked, and everything melted. The Bible says melted or dissolved with a fervent heat. And so if you got a big impact that penetrated the crust and heated it up, because remember, inside the Earth is still heat, and heat's being given off, and we don't burn our feet because the crust of the planet, the outer shell, keeps as a kind of an insulator, but heat is being given off. And now you get an explosion of a really big impactor in the interior. It's going to stir things up. And it could stir things up to the point that the crust would start to melt. And in that case, every mountain and every valley would disappear or flee, because it would be resurfaced. And again, I said, this is the case on Venus. And we know that Mars had the top half of itself blown off by a huge impact, because the top half of Mars looks different from the southern hemisphere of Mars, because there was a big, big impact that literally blew off the crust and everything there. So it seems, if I'm trying to follow what the Bible says and see if there's any kind of logical explanation, some scientific explanation, it ends with a very, very big impact. In 2 Peter, it talks about the earth melts with a fervent heat. It also talks about that in Isaiah, that first the big impact rocks the earth, and if it penetrates, we know that even earthquakes or tsunamis can jiggle the Earth's axis. We know that an earthquake over 7 on the Richter scale could make the Earth's axis move a couple of inches. Well, if you've got something that tens of thousands of times bigger, the Earth's axis is going to be rocked, and you can penetrate the crust. They throw you right out of the room if you said, geez, we can get an impactor.
Yeah, if I can just bring this up, because I was... the Book of Revelation has a website here that I've referred to, and it says in chapter 16, the seven angels and the seven bowls of wrath are the same seven angels that had seven trumpets, which involve the asteroid and its effect. It says that in 16:2, which is what you were quoting, is a result of an asteroid entering the atmosphere and destroying a large part of the ozone, which took place in Revelation 8:7, through and by the end of the tribulation period. And it says here, compare Revelation 8, chapter 8, verse 8 and 9. When the asteroid hit at the beginning of the tribulation, one-third of the creatures in the sea died suddenly. By the end of the tribulation, all of the creatures in that ocean. asteroid spread through the ocean. And then it continues. One-third of the ships were sunk or destroyed and see no further word in the ships because they damaged onto ships and blah, blah, blah. But it says, as a result of the asteroid hitting, one-third of the waters were polluted. And by the end of the tribulation, most of the water supply will be affected. As a result of the asteroid's effect on the sky in Revelation 8:12, by the end of the tribulation, will be causing severe effects upon man from the sun, as seen in Revelation 16:8-9. And he goes, the devil will cast to the earth and be released, the demons from the bottomless pit, and so on and so forth. It's there about an asteroid hitting, but there's so many other aspects, Jeff, that relate to this, and people are trying to piece together the fall of our empire, if you will, and relating it to this. In fact, he has a very large this particular website has a particular gloom and doom, saying that it's going to that the asteroids projected to hit. They said basically it's going to hit on the north. It's going to hit in the east. And destroy the eastern part of the United States. Of course, Washington, New York, all of that. So, and causing, a complete world disaster. And that the Antichrist will come up after that. Will rise from the chaos that comet, these comets hit. And he's also saying that four comets will be hitting. That is stating that it will be four comets. Does your research point to that as well, or?
Yeah. Well, you've been doing your homework, Leo. You're getting the.
Yeah. No. I've been following this quite a bit over the years. But ever since Fukushima, when some of the results came out about Fukushima and the. Devastation that's caused, and the radiation throughout the entire planet, has increased by 10 or 20 fold, in some cases by 14,000-15,000 times the safety levels. Then you see that the plutonium leakage into the Pacific Ocean stated that it could kill up to one third of the ocean. Okay. We haven't seen any of the. I mean, what's happened
all
so
right.
far?
Let me box that for you.
So you start to wonder about the seventh seal. You start to wonder if we're already in the tribulation period, and if that might have been one of the major signs. But now, is that just something extra, or now are we really going to be experiencing an asteroid in the next few years?
I don't know the next few years, but you're getting the gist of it. You're on the scent and on the trail, because you mentioned things from the seven trumpets and you mentioned things from the seven vials, things from chapters 8 and 9 in Revelation, and things from the vials from chapter 16. What seems to be the case is not a comet or a asteroid, but a sequence. Remember when we had Comet Shoemaker-Levy and it had a long train of 22 mini pieces with it, and it landed?
Yeah.
And you got it. So now, when I was taking geology back in the dark ages, you would get an impact once every million years, maybe, or 5 million years. Now we realize you could have multiple impacts in a short amount of time. And what seems to be the case in the seven trumpets and the seven vials is a series of impacts, and depending on where the comet / asteroid hits, you get different effects. So now in the first trumpet, we get an impact, a relatively small one that hits the forest and creates great fires. In the second one, we have one that hits the sea, and Comet Hartley 2, I talked about that at the beginning of the show. The NASA saw that it carries a tremendous amount of cyanide. It was giving off jets of cyanide within the jets of gas coming out. And so that would be poisonous to anything in the sea. And in the third trumpet, We talk about it falling on the rivers, and if it's carrying poison, it would obviously wormwood, it would poison the water. And the fourth trumpet, we're talking about men being burnt and the sun being put out. If you have an air impact, so notice the pattern. You get one hitting the land, one hitting the sea, one hitting the rivers, one busting up in the sky, okay, and busts up in the sky. Then the fifth one is a very deep impact, and it talks about the smoke of a great furnace and the air rolling back. Well, we learn when you have a nuclear explosion, this is what happens. You would get this tremendous heat pulse, thermal pulse going out. And it talks about, then you mentioned the sixth trumpet, where there's four of them heading towards the Tigris Euphrates. And then in the seventh is the big, big event. Now, it's not seven impacts that just almost destroy the world and then seven trumpets and then seven vials. No, but you got to realize the seven trumpets are what happens from the perspective of space hitting the earth, okay? Seven things that affect the earth, and they're talking about seven comet impacts. The seven vials, everything is destroyed, there's nothing left to destroy, is the same seven impacts from the perspective of man. You see? And if you take a piece of paper out and put what happens during the trumpets, one through seven, and what happens during the vials, you'll see that they cross over. Now, why would that be? Well, in the Bible, it says the way to establish something is with two witnesses. Everything shall be established by two or more witnesses. So the seven trumpets is the witness concerning the earth, and the seven vials is the witness concerning men. And that's why, in terms of men, we have rashes. We have dead things in the sea, men scorched. You see, that's the air impact that blots out the sun. And if you go to the fourth, that was the fourth trumpet, and you go to the fourth vial, now men are scorched with heat and have pain. In the fifth vial, we have darkness, and it seems like some bacteria are loosed. We know, and this is a very controversial thing, there's a lot of stuff going on where guys are arguing that they have found bacteria in comets and meteorites. We know the building blocks for life and bacteria is found in there. Some of them have very high carbon content and amino acids, which are part of the building blocks of life. And so we've got parallel stories going on, perspective of the planet, perspective of the man, of men. And so they match up very nicely. And what happens is they seem to be of an increasing magnitude. It gets worse and worse until 16, by the end of it, what can I tell you? The whole place is not too good. You know, we got the hail coming down, and then we talk about the earth being burned with a fervent heat. That is from 2 Peter and also Isaiah. And it's like, who can survive? And indeed, in Jesus' words in the Olivet Prophecy, he says, unless certain people are taken out of the way, no flesh would survive. So it seems like, I don't want to get into controversy here and get everybody stirred, but some people are saved out of it. They're, you know, they could be protected through it. You know, the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they were put in the big oven, and fire didn't touch them. Or, I hate to say this word, some people may be raptured out of here and sit on the sidelines with that sun, and then after it's over, returned. And it's just like the place has been resurfaced. And so it would be a new heaven and earth, and in this case, heaven, a new atmosphere in earth was made over. Because one of the principles in the Bible throughout the Old Testament, when something had mildew or plague or anything, you were to burn the building. Oh, you know, if you had a house and they got signs of bacteria in there or plague, you're supposed to burn it, clean it with fire. So it seems that one of the themes, God following a pattern in the Bible, that when you want to clean something, you put it to the flames. And so ultimately you put it to the flames. Now, no, as the Bible says, no flesh could survive that. And so they're taken out of the way and then returned. And so if you believe in God, which I do, he's able to pull people out of it, as we have stories in the Old Testament about of of that nature. And then as George said, we start a thousand years, millennium of, you know, kind of like a golden age.
You know, Jeffrey, yeah, I think the question that I have right now is even though, you know, the Bible talks about the comets and the devastation that it would cause, but you take a look at what's going on now in our solar system with our sun and some of the energies that are given off. And you take a look, you're familiar with the Schumann resonance, the energy around us?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, there is a certain amount of energy around us. And normally, for years, that was at 7.8 hertz. And it's a electromagnetic frequency. And what's happened is with the energies that the sun is giving off now, it's raising that frequency, and we're up around 12 hertz. And my point is here, maybe there comes a point where, you know, we could vibrate, you know, in a higher frequency where, you know, the physical three-dimensional realities of, let's say, some of the bacteria and so forth, we would have no effect on us. And, of course, radiation and so forth would actually it wouldn't affect us, you know. In understanding, you know, some of the esoteric knowledges of let's say your life on Venus and so forth, where the atmosphere is much different than ours, it's with different frequencies of the body that they emanate that gives them the ability to do that. And I'm just looking at possibly the possibilities of some of the new generation now that are being born and how a lot of the DNA is different, you know, from, let's say, the generation of 20, 30 years ago. So I'm just saying, you know, there are alternatives that, you know, I would look at as possibilities of, you know, turning this around and finding a good part of this Armageddon, if you'd want to call it that, and look at it, you know, how we could live, you know, or turn this into a thousand years of peace, like the ancients told us about.
I just wanted to bring in. You're out there, your eyes are searching, and your mind's wandering.
Could you excuse me for 1 second, because the show is ending. We've got about 3 minutes left, so we can't get into long-winded explanations. But I just wanted to say to people who are listening, if you want to, we may wind up going a little longer, but the stream will end within the next 2 minutes. So if you want to join us or call in, please call in at 646-915-9505. Again, you can join us at 646-915-9505, and we can extend the show a little further. But I wanted to ask, I wanted to thank Jeffrey for being with us tonight, and I wanted to mention that the name of his book is called The Comets of God and New Scientific Evidence for God, recent archaeological, geological, and astronomical discoveries that shine new light on the Bible and its prophecies. And you can go to cometsofgod.com and get the book there, I believe, as well as
the free downloads about this Russia and Armageddon,
right,
and about the War of Ezekiel is all
actually
there for free. You just got to press the button.
I did download the chapter 9 there that you recommended, and I wanted to tell people that I want to thank George. Thank you, George, for being on tonight and getting hold of Jeff for me, and you know, we had a great discussion.
Well, Jeff has agreed to come back next week if we'd like, to continue our conversations, because we just touched the surface this tonight, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me add one thing real quick. We've all heard the story of the Exodus. We all watched the movie. And a lot of people don't realize that in the Old Testament, God, who was asked what would the end be like, and he says, as in the days of Noah, as in the days of Moses, where he did all these series of miraculous events, which I believe a lot of them had to do with comets, we're going to go through a period like that again. So this is just putting in perspective. This end time seems to be the latter day play, much like the plagues of the year of the Exodus on Egypt, where God is judging in these stages You know, do you believe me now? No? Okay. Now the next one, do you believe me now? No? Okay. And so,
I'm going to lose our stream in about 9 seconds, but I wanted to mention, you. Can you be on next week? That would be great if we could have you on next
week. Yes,
Thursday.
I can. I'd love to. Especially if people have questions, if they go check out the website and look at it, I would welcome questions about this, because the things I have are very different from what has usually been presented. And I try to bring a scientific perspective to this thing and look at the whole picture and find matchups within the Bible itself. Because if the Bible is not inconsistent, if it's not consistent with itself, then we already know it's suspect. And the thing that amazes me is it's awful consistent.
Right. I hope that we can, let's pick up this discussion next week, next Thursday night, same time, same place, everyone, and go from that, and hopefully people will be able to check out your website, perhaps buy your book, it's called The Comets of God, and you can go to thecometsofgod.com and check that out there. And Jeff,
Jeffrey, they can contact you if they wanted to email you.
Yes, it's on the website.
Okay, great.
Yeah, the email address is on the website. And,
right,
you know,
great.
I got to watch out because you guys have been studying up and learning all this stuff here.
Leo is running through all those
trumpets and everything, like, right off the back of his hand here, what's going on. But here's one last thing.
Here's.
You know, we've had earthquakes. We've had tidal waves. Oh, we've seen bacterial trouble. Are we getting sensitized for what's to come? So when the Bible says there's going to be a big tsunami, do we now know what a big tsunami means?
It's true. I mean, maybe we are being desensitized, but I don't know. I'm hoping that 212 is more Gentile than, I shouldn't say Gentile, more gentle than what we're anticipating, but I want to talk to you more about that, more about Revelation, but more about rapture, more about ascension, more about these areas in the Revelation, and more about the onset of the return of Christ and whatnot, and how that is all to be revealed, and of course, who possibly could be the Antichrist, you know. Because I don't know if the tribulation next 5 to 7 years, or if it's going to be now, or if it's when it's actually starting.
3.5 years for the really bad stuff.
What's that?
It's a 7-year period, and all the bad stuff is in the last 3.5 year period.
Ah, okay. So it probably starts after the 212, you know, so we'll see. But
I don't know.
Yeah. Either, but
try not to be there.
It's really as we've been following these prophecies, especially with the Mayan calendar prophecies, it's been really freaky. How the events have been playing into that, and right into those prophecies. So we're hopefully we can pick this up next week, next Thursday night, right here.
Okay.
And Jeff, I want to thank you so much for being on.
Well, thank you for your interest, and I appreciate it when you talk to someone and they've done some homework. So I'll have
I know what that's like.
Sharpen up for you guys.
Like, you know, people getting your book and not knowing what the hell the name of it is, or you know, what have been, no one's ever read it. You know, they picked up some kind of a flyer or something, but they don't know the depth of it. But I want to, especially on a major subject like this, we appreciate you being on. We appreciate your research, and hopefully people will pick up a copy of the book and be fascinated by it, as we are. And George, always thank you, and we'll be talking to you tomorrow night.
Why, thank you, and Jeffrey, do me a favor, say hello to my friend Brendan, if you would, and hope to catch you next week.
Okay.
All right, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you, guys.
I'll be with you, my friend.
Yeah, good night. And tomorrow night, for everybody being on, George will be with us, and we're going to have a continued discussion with Ross Hamilton, the author of The Tradition of Giants and the Serpent Mounds, And I think we're going to have a tremendous talk there. So look forward to that. And George, thanks again. And Jeff, if you see, you're still on the line. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, guys. So see you next week. And that's the end of the show. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night.